Hi, folks. This is Bugs Bunny, and Bill Farmer played me in the television show Robot Chicken. And you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Hi, this is Jerry Donaldson.
And this is Eugenia Stapira.
And welcome back to another episode of
Women Talk Sci-Fi.
I think we coordinated ourselves slightly better then. Welcome back, everyone, to another wonderful, interesting episode, I think, anyway.
Well, we've got two wonderful interviews to put on this one. We've got some bumper issues coming up, that's for sure.
The thing we're going to talk about this time is just crappy good sci-fi, or good crappy sci-fi, or it's
bad crappy sci-fi that's good.
Yes. Or a variation. A movie that you expect to watch that you think, but then you go away going, gee, I love that. It happens quite often, actually, doesn't it?
It does. But I do find that if you watch it with people around you, that sometimes you get more enjoyment than if you've watched it on your own.
Yes, that's right. We, I suppose, have an annual thing, don't we, that we sort of get together and we choose a movie, usually a Z-list movie, not even a B-list or a D. And we have a crappy sci-fi night around at Eugenia's place where we sit out in the middle of the carport with a projector, a white sheet up, and we have a crappy sci-fi movie and we enjoy yelling at it or talking about it or laughing. And so it's quite an entertaining night annually that we do that.
It's our version of Mystery Science Theatre.
It is, in a way, yes. So people can chat and laugh and make stupid comments or throw things at the screen if they wish to.
So we've had a couple that we've watched that are really bad.
Oh, we've had a lot we've watched that are really bad, not just a couple. Because we've been doing it probably 7 or 8 years now.
We have, yes. And the Singing King Kong movie was probably the worst one.
Oh, yeah. That was a British movie. It was really bad. Although The Man with Two Heads is pretty bad too.
Oh, well, the car chase. If you have not watched The Man with Two Heads, you have to, because the car chase in that goes for about 20 minutes.
And it's just again and again and again and again. And you go, I've seen this bit before.
I've seen that ditch before.
I've seen that car hit that thing that way. But it's really funny to watch with a group of people, because we really recommend that you go out and do it. But you have a night where you sit down with food and drink and expect to be yelling at your screen or laughing.
The two movies that we're going to talk about in particular, one is my favourite of all time, and I know lots and lots of people have seen this, and that's Galaxy Quest.
Yes, Galaxy Quest. I really enjoyed Galaxy Quest. I went along, I think, when it first came out. Did we see it together?
Probably.
And even my husband enjoyed it, I mean, as opposed to, because he doesn't enjoy always sci-fi stuff. But we went along with expectations not too high, and we walked out with our expectations really raised.
Well, I loved it because I think for years after watching it, whenever anyone said, well, what's it like going to a convention? I'd say, have you ever seen Galaxy Quest? And I go, it's a bit like that.
I mean, even Tom the Toolman Taylor didn't do too bad a job in it. Oh, He's not my favourite actor, but
he played the best Kirk.
Sigourney Weaver, of course, is an icon of science fiction, and she played that really well. Alan Rickman.
Oh, he was just fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, you know what he reminded me of? The robot from Galaxy Quest. From Hitchhiker's.
That's strange because he was the voice of that particular robot.
The character, the sort of the sour, dour, I'm never going to achieve anything, this is my life.
But I think he played the character of a lot of actors who have put themselves into a role where they've become stereotyped. And
do you mean he was the William Shatner of the 1980s?
I think so. Along with probably the Adam West as well. You know, where you're only associated with one role and then people just love you in that role, but you just don't want to say that particular quote again and you don't want to be remembered again for it. It's like Carrie Fisher, of course, who has now passed away, but she knew that she is going to have Princess Leia as the person she's going to be remembered for forever.
There are some movies that are always going to do that to people. 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is one of the podcasts we've put up in the past. I mean, these two guys, regardless, are always known as 2001 A Space Odyssey. Like, how old is that? And we were talking to them about it not that long ago.
That's right. Well, over 50 years, nearly 50 years.
So there are significant movies that do that. And Galaxy Quest isn't quite 2001.
No.
But it is a funny, entertaining, smiley movie that makes you want to go away with a happy heart, as opposed to a I looked like an idiot because I go to these conventions kind of thing.
I loved it. I mean, we only rewatched that recently. I think that our one before the last one, we put it on. And when you go to conventions and when you're part of the geek world, watching this movie, you just laugh because you can see bits of yourself or you can see bits of other people that you know in it. I mean, when you've got the geeky guy who suddenly goes, I knew it was real, when he's talking to Tim Allen's character about the map and where everything is, it's like, oh, yeah.
Well, we do know people that know things that specific. We don't. We're not of that ilk, but we do know people.
Some things we are, but not to the stage that we know every single piece of the spaceship.
No. I mean, you might know every episode and people ask you a question, you suddenly go, God, I'm a geek. But not to that level, and not every fan is that in-depth in terms of it.
The other movie that we're going to talk about a little bit is Space Milkshake. And
what is Space Milkshake? A lot of people go, what is
yeah,
it?
Actually, a lot of people won't know about it at all. And the thing is, once you know who's in it, you'll go, why don't I know about this movie? Because we have Billy Boyd, who was a
from
Hobbit.
Lord of the Rings.
Yep. We have Amanda Tapping.
From Stargate and Atlantis. And 500,000 other things. Sanctuary.
We have Robin Dunn.
Who was in Sanctuary as well.
We have, now I can't ever pronounce her name correctly, Kristen Kunst.
Who was, of course, in
Smallville.
For many, many years.
Yes, it's Lana Lang.
And
Lana Lang.
Lana Lang, yes. And she's been in Beauty and the Beast in recent years. So she's been around. So the four of them.
And we also have...
We have a voice of a very iconic person who... Or George Takei.
Yeah.
I mean, what more sci-fi can you get with the four of them and George Takei?
Mm.
And it is a weird, strange little movie.
It is. But also... Billy Boyd and Amanda Tapping were the ones that produced it too. So they put the money and got the backing for the particular movie. So it was a love for them. It wasn't just a group of people that came together because somebody else had planned it. They actually had planned it and wanted to make this particular movie.
It is a weird little movie though, isn't it?
It is.
It's weird. It's sort of made specifically to be a D-grade film that's entertaining.
Yes.
The sets are amazing for such... a great movie, and as you'll find out in one of our interviews, they were lucky enough to have another movie that was being dismantled and they could use them. The monster is...
Yeah, well, you know Howard the Duck?
Yeah.
That's part of the movie...
It's almost a Gorn. It's a Gorn. It's a sort of that kind of character, you know, like, you know, it's a Gorn.
You have to laugh.
You have to, because you couldn't accept it any other way. But it's very funny and it's very entertaining. And great actors. I mean, the four of them are just amazing.
They are. But I think this particular movie, you enjoy more with other people.
Yes, it's the kind of thing, again, if you sit down and have some food and drink of whatever ilk as you watch it, you will find that it becomes much more entertaining as it goes along.
It does.
Some of it's, I mean, they play on stereotypes. Billy Boyd is particularly funny in it. I mean, you want to smack him on occasion, but he is particularly funny.
And you'll never see Y fronts exactly in the same
white
way.
White Y fronts, no. don't bring that image into my head, please. The very lucky people that are listening to this are going to actually get to listen to Billy Boyd.
They are.
Tell us about basically making the milkshake. And it took forever for us to get a copy of it, didn't it? We had looked everywhere for it. It's not easy to get, so I really recommend that you have to look. Maybe it's a Netflix in America or Netflix in the UK. It's not on our, that I'm aware of, on our systems yet.
Now, the other interview we have is Sam Lloyd. Now, people may not know who that is in relation to sci-fi either, because
he's got quite a pedigree of behindness.
Well, he has, because he's a relative
of an iconic other Lloyd.
Christopher Lloyd.
Which, of course, is Doc Brown.
From Back to the Future.
I didn't know that until we met him, really, did we?
No, we didn't. We did a bit of research and found out, but Christopher Lloyd is his uncle.
And, of course, he's been in Scrubs. Everybody should know him from Scrubs.
He's the finance officer in Scrubs.
That big, tall, laconic character.
And he
is tall. Damn tall. I'm short. So everybody's tall, but he's really tall.
And he played one of the aliens in Galaxy Quest.
It was his, I'm not going to tell him the story. Because no, because he... In the interview, he tells the story much better than me.
Because he did think it was going to make his movie career.
But there's a little nice little story about it.
Yes, so have a listen to it because it is worthwhile listening to. And the other thing that he talks about too is his love of music. And, of course, he's part of a band, which you see in Scrubs. They do a lot of a cappella as well as band stuff. And one of the songs that they do is about Superman. And we have used it on our Superman podcast, but we might even play it again on this particular podcast.
Or something else.
Or maybe something else. Yes, because he gave me a copy of his album, which was really
nice.
And
permission to use it.
Yes.
Permission to use songs from it. So
I have that on tape.
It's always good to indicate that we are not taking stuff and putting it up there. He's tall, though. I have to keep saying that because he's really tall.
Well, for you, maybe. He wasn't that tall.
Well,
but
he's tall for me. Quite tall.
There are a lot of great movies around that are really crappy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think crappy is really quite entertaining. I mean, you have to go all the way back to the movies that we've watched before. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we look at Ed Wood, we've done crappy sci-fi nights with Ed Wood, and they are bad, but they're so bad that they are hilarious. So you can have an entertaining night with friends. I mean, I have to mention it. There's a movie that sounds really bad, and it's called Big Ass Spider, which looks as if it's really crap, but it's one of my favourite movies, where you should never look at a movie and judge it by its cover, exactly the same way as a book, because you really don't know what's in.
That's for sure. And we've also done a review in one of our podcasts from before on Sand Sharks with Corin Nemec in it.
It was hilarious. Oh. Which is another one we used on our crappy sci-fi night.
We did, and we just loved it so much that when we saw him, we had to get our videos, our DVDs, signed by him because it was such a fantastic film.
It's crappy, but it's a funny, crappy movie. It doesn't take itself seriously, which is probably what a lot of those movies does. Like Space Milkshake doesn't take itself seriously. Neither does Big Ass Spider take itself seriously. Galaxy Quest, it takes itself a lot more seriously than the others, but not all seriously.
No, but I think because it takes itself a little bit more seriously, but in that it's actually quite funny because the seriousness becomes funny.
In a way,
in a way. That's really one of those odd ones. It doesn't fit in the real B grade, C grade, D grade. It is an A grade film, really, but it has the connotation.
A minus.
But it doesn't fit into those other ones. You know, it's not a mystery science theatre type of movie that they do, and they really take some of the worst of the worst.
Is this just me talking out of the top of my head, or was there a rumour that there may be a sequel to it?
To Galaxy Quest?
Hmm.
I think there was at one stage, but whether with Alan Rickman now not being with us anymore.
Yeah, maybe it'll fall through. That's a shame. It would have been fun, I think.
I think it would have been to see where they landed next.
Or what happened, although they were a few years older.
Well, they were a few years older to begin with.
Well, that's true. I suppose it could be 10 years in the future, are we still going? Because they were back on TV again, weren't they?
They were. After them coming back from the planet, yes, they began to have a new show. So, you know.
I suppose there could be the second generation of Galaxy Questing if we did it out there. There are movies out there that you should watch. Don't necessarily take what other people say as it, but it's always better to watch a movie with a group of people.
Oh, for sure, because we watched one with Mark Hamill, Ben Kingsley.
Oh,
yes, and you would have thought with that. I mean, and then
that was crappy though. That was crappy. Really, that wasn't a crappy movie that turned good. That was a crappy movie that got crappier as you watched it.
And it was called Slipstream.
Oh.
And there's actually two Slipstreams. One's the one with Mark Hamill, and then there's another Slipstream that's totally a different movie.
It's just every time I hear that, it makes me think of Sean Connery in his mankini.
Oh, Zardoc? Something starting with Z.
That's just how bad they go. They make you think worse.
Yes, there are some that you shouldn't probably watch even with friends.
And Sean Connery in a mankini is one.
Oh, that's for sure. Just Google the image. Yes,
Sears in your brain.
Yeah, once seen, never forgotten. That's for sure.
On that note, though, I think we should move on.
We probably should move on.
We've got to the depths of really bad.
So we've got our two interviews. So our first interview will be with Sam.
And our second one will be with the Billy Boyd, who didn't make me feel particularly short.
Well, he's a hobbit, so you know.
He was fairly short. He was he was a short little Celtic man, but very sweet, very nice. enjoy our interviews with them.
I can't. I won't. I won't say that stupid line one more time.
Terrific Alexander Day! Here! Hooray!
My grandfather's hammer, you shall be avenged.
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure.
Now, most people would know you from the role of Ted in Scrubs,
mm-hmm.
but that's not the reason why I'd like to interview you today, and that's because you've been in the most amazing movie called Galaxy Quest.
Absolutely. I starred in Galaxy Quest, and the fact that you even knew I was in that movie is very impressive.
So how did you get involved in it?
Well, I auditioned for it, and this is my Galaxy Quest story. I auditioned for Galaxy Quest and was so excited to audition for it because I thought it was such a funny script. And I've been a sci-fi guy since I was a kid, and you know, I was dressing up like Spock when I was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper. And so I auditioned for it, prayed I would get it, got the part. When I auditioned, there were four lines. You know, it was pretty, it was a nice little part mm-hmm. in a movie that big. So I was very excited. I got the part. When I went to the read-through, now I had two lines.
Aww.
I lost two lines. So then, but I'm like, that's okay. You don't need a lot of screen time, you know, in a film like that to make an impression. So then we started shooting. And we started shooting the movie, and then I had one line, okay? But I'm like, it's okay, no problem, it's a funny line, I think. Maybe I can, you know, maybe people will remember it. Then the movie came out, and I had no lines. They had cut me out of every line I had was cut. So then at this point, I'm going, well, people are, you know, I'm basically an extra in Galaxy Quest, okay? And I looked like everybody, you know, the aliens all kind of looked the same, so I thought, you know what, I'm not even going to tell anybody I was in Galaxy Quest. It'll be better that way. So I figure I'm totally incognito, and the movie's about to open up. I go into an audition, and the casting director sees me and goes, Sam! Congratulations! I said, for what? He goes, for Galaxy Quest! That's great! Now, the movie wasn't even out yet, and I knew I wasn't in the movie, really. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? He goes, oh, Entertainment Weekly, the magazine. I saw the picture. I'm like, show me. What are you talking about? In the section in this magazine that says, coming up this week, they have little production stills of all the movies. There was a production still, and in the production still was Alan Rickman, Sigourney Weaver, Tim Allen, and me.
Oh, really?
They had taken one picture, and in the background between Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver, you could see me as plain as day, and they credited me in the picture, Sam Lloyd. I'm like, well, what can you do?
And it is a brilliant movie, isn't it?
It's a great movie. I just wish I was in it.
But you still recognize, I mean, most of the scenes, you still were there with the aliens in the background there somewhere.
I was.
Aren't you?
I was one of those four aliens, the ones without the line. But, you know, other than that, I was in the movie.
So how did you get involved in acting?
I actually kind of grew up in a family. My mom and dad met doing summer theater in the town that I grew up in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
Which is a New England state in the United States. So my mom had a children's theater company that she started there. So my first role was as one of the rats in the Pied Piper. I was a baby rat, and it's a miracle that I kept acting because I was 3 years old, but I had just gotten potty trained. I was off diapers.
Yep.
But because I was the baby rat, my mom made me wear a diaper over my black tights as the baby rat, which I wanted no part of, you know. But somehow I stuck with it. Yeah.
So from there you went on to study, or you...
Yeah. So, you know... Also, that summer theater, I ended up doing kids' roles as a child, And then, and so I kind of knew, I never, there was never a day that I thought, I think I'll be an actor. I just kind of figured that's what I would be. Mm-hmm. And I saw my parents acting on stage as a kid. And then I went to school, I went to university and majored in musical theater there. And then right out of school, I came out to Los Angeles, went out to Los Angeles because I grew up in the Northeast and I needed to get warm. So I went out to Los Angeles and just started plugging away.
Just had a few people being very fanboyish with you.
Very much so, yeah. Really sweet.
Is this something that's been new to you, just coming to conventions, or have you done that before?
No, this is the second time. I went to Adelaide and Perth last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob is the one who told me about it and talked to the people here about it. And they asked me to come, and I was happy to do it. It's been real, real great experience.
Is it different meeting fans, who's watched TV shows like Scrubs? Obviously, these guys just love it to death.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that make you feel as an actor?
Oh, it makes you feel great, you know? It makes you feel great. Especially because it was, you know, we finished it like 5 years ago, and you can see it still touches them, mm-hmm. you know. But that was one of the great things about Scrubs, is that it was a really funny show, but they were able to have some real, the show had real heart to it, mm-hmm. you know, and it could turn and become something serious and touching, you know. And I think that's why it's touched so many people.
Which do you prefer, dramatic or comedy?
You know, I've liked to make people laugh since I was a kid. So, you know, I think since my first laugh in Annie Get Your Gun when I was like 11 years old playing Little Jake, which was a musical, I think that hooked me at an early age. But I love comedy. I grew up watching the Marx Brothers and Laurel and Hardy and got to know Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, who's my biggest, I'm a fanboy to Buster Keaton, but, you know, that stuff, and then Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder and Peter Sellers, that's kind of what's really gets me going. But I like to play both sides of it, and I've done West Wing and Desperate Housewives, even though that's kind of a comedy, but I've done a lot of dramatic stuff as well, and I love doing that too. Yeah.
Do you do much live theater?
In fact, I just finished a production of Guys and Dolls.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you've gone back to your musical roots?
Yeah, absolutely, and that was just a blast. And I actually did that in the same theater that I grew up doing theater in,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is now a fantastic equity theater in New England, the Weston Playhouse. Great, great, great theater. They get a lot of people from New York, a lot of talent from New York and Broadway and Chicago and Los Angeles. So it's a great, great theater now.
So music has been a bit of a passion for you as well?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. do you play an instrument, or is your voice your instrument?
Yeah, no, I play bass guitar. I play a little keyboards and a little guitar, but mostly bass guitar. I also, one of the guys from my quartet on Scrubs, we also have a Beatles cover band that we've played
really?
In since college. Yeah, and we play every summer in Vermont in and we just had our gig over the 4th of July again.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, some of the most fun I ever had.
So have you put that to CD at all?
Yeah, actually we do. We have a Christmas CD
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we never got how some of these Beatles, and we're a Beatle cover band. We don't dress up like the Beatles. We're not a tribute band, but we try to sound as close to the Beatles as we can.
Mm-hmm.
We take real pride in doing that, the four of us. And but we never saw the point of being a Beatle band and putting out an album of Beatles songs, because you could just listen to the Beatles and that would probably give you a better idea of how it should be done. But what we did was we made a Christmas album where we took Christmas songs and did them in the style of Beatles songs.
Oh, really?
And you'd be amazed at how close some Christmas songs sound like Beatles songs. That was a great fun project that we did over, we'd get together every Christmas, after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year, meet in New York and record three more songs, And eventually, over the span of like 5 years, we got like 12 songs together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the Butties, B-U-T-T-I-E-S,
mm-hmm.
as in, you know, that's an English sandwich made out of toast and butter and, you know, whatever they put
in. And you have a chip butty where you put chips or potato chips.
Yes, and the Beatles, you know, they in the Hard Day's Night, they mention, oh, let's go get a butty, you know, and the... And it looks good because it's got a big B at the beginning and you make the T long and an ES at the end. So it looks good on the drum head. The problem is that, you know, we have a website, thebuddies.com. But if you leave the out mm-hmm. and just put buddies.com, we can't be responsible for what you will find.
Oh, what comes up?
Yeah,
okay, so we have to make sure that you
put the
in front.
Yeah. But we have an album called The 12 Greatest Carols.
Oh, and so that's available through your website?
Yeah, you can find out through our website, and it's also on iTunes and mm-hmm. CDBaby.com, I think.
Oh, great. Oh, we'll certainly have a look at that. And you've also got a Scrubs album as well.
Yes, we have the Blanks' Riding the Wave mm-hmm. is our Scrubs album. And we have also... Hey Ya, and that's on iTunes as well, Hey Ya and some of the others. But the Blanks Riding the Wave has like the first 5 years, all the songs we did on Scrubs are on there.
Yeah. Oh, fabulous. If anyone is feeling a little bit nostalgic, they can certainly relive some of your music.
Absolutely. And, you know, it also features the cast and creator of Scrubs, but the recordings of the cast and creator of Scrubs were used without their knowledge or permission.
Right.
So
is that available also on your buddies, the buddies?
No, that would you can go to the Blanks website.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where you can find information about that.
Right. Oh, well, we'll make sure that that's put into our case notes so that people can find it.
Fantastic, yeah.
So what's up next for you?
Right now, I've been doing a lot of guest star stuff on TV shows over the last year. I did an episode, a little part on Modern Family and something on Bones and Shameless and done a voiceover commercial for Verizon and me and Paul Perry, who is one of the Blanks and also one of the Butties, he's the guy who arranged all our stuff
mm-hmm.
for the Blanks. We're working on a stage musical that we're hoping to put up in the next year or so.
Oh, so what's that going to be about?
That's going to be about a country music band that nobody listened to. That's what it's going to be about.
So they actually got their wish as a country and western band that, you know, it's the Hard Knocks.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. They wanted to be, it's about a country music couple, and they wanted to be like Tim McGraw and Faith Hill,
mm-hmm.
but they never got there.
Oh, right.
Right.
So you're hoping to put that...
Hoping to get that up over the next year or two, hopefully maybe in the theater that I was mentioning before, the Western Playhouse, next mm-hmm. summer or the summer after.
Has it got a working title at this stage?
Yeah, the working title is called With Special Guest Pam and Gil.
Oh, okay.
That's the working title. So we'll see. That might stick.
So it's a bit of fun for you as well as something you'd like to put on stage.
Yeah, it's great fun. And the music's going to be really... I'm really excited about the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So lots of toe-tapping and boot-scooting.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time, yeah.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure.
And we will look out for that small part that you have in Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, look sharp.
Yes, definitely, because he is there, everyone.
Yeah, I am.
But it does go down as one of, I guess, explaining what conventions are all about and what it is to be a geek, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's why I loved being part of it, even though I had nothing to say about it. Literally, it was just being... I just thought the idea was just brilliant. And, you know, I've been a Trekkie since I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
like I said. So
there was something inside of you that just spoke, yeah.
Yeah.
This is
exactly
how a Trekkie feels.
Right, exactly. I mean, it was easy. It was easy to do because of that.
Did you have a sad day when Leonard Nimoy died as well?
Oh, so sad. So sad. But also just so happy that he was able to leave behind such a great body of work.
Mm.
I mean, what an amazing guy. And also does a great job singing the song Bilbo Baggins.
Oh, doesn't he just?
I love that. It's on my mixtape.
And it's on YouTube if you want to find it too. There's the original film clips there.
Oh, great. I'll check that out.
It's a classic.
It is.
Oh, Sam, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion.
And if I claim to be a wise man, well, it surely means that I don't know.
Though my eyes could see, I still was a blind man. Though my mind could think, I still was a madman.
I hear the voices when I'm dreaming. I can hear them say,
carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Hi, Billy. Welcome to Australia.
Hello.
You've been here a lot, though, down this part of the world.
I've never been to this side of Australia.
Have you?
No, this is all new to me.
So, we're not going to talk about The Lord of the Rings, because you've done that a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'd like to talk about Space Milkshake.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That is a good one. It's an absurd comedy, almost, isn't
it? Yeah, I love it.
And you produced it as well?
Yeah, and it's probably the most fun I've ever had on set. It was good.
Well, it looks quite bizarre with a nice big multi-eyed. Yes. Who thought that up?
The
monster.
The monster.
Oh, they had a monster guy there, who you know, I think we were really keen to not use CG to make real, you know, a real monster, and obviously the guys who work in that sort of thing aren't getting as much chance to do that as they used to, you know.
Yeah.
So he was really excited about making his monster. And also because it grew and changed size and all that. It was, and he got, well, I don't worry, he weighs the end, but he gets to blow it up. At,
yes,
you know,
all
so,
of you.
Yeah. So it was just a riot. And he loved it and we loved it. And yeah, it was just exactly what we wanted.
Well, it was a very ensemble type show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's only the four of you really that.
Yeah.
Is that different than making such a big movie like Lord of the Rings? I mean, you produced it, so...
Yeah, well, you kind of feel more part of it. That's the thing about films sometimes, is, you know, they say there's three films, right? There's the script, the one you film, and the one you edit.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can feel like you're not part of it. You do your bit, and you think, oh, that was really good, and then when you watch the movie, that scene's not in.
Mm-hmm.
Or they've edited it in a way that you're like, oh, that wasn't what the scene was about, you know? So when there's only the four of you, and it was the four of us and the writer, director, Arwen, and Rob Merrill, he's the producer, we all kind of worked very closely together, you know? So we all kind of knew the movie we wanted to make, and we changed it every day, and we were part of it from, you know, from the moment it was written till the moment it came out. So you just feel more part of it as a thing, I suppose.
So did you actually stick to the script?
Oh, hardly ever.
You look as if you're having great fun.
Yeah. I mean, we stuck to the story, you know, but we riffed around the story quite a bit. Armin, who wrote it, is a huge fan of sci-fi. And so there was a lot of things in it that he wanted kept and not as a homage, really, to sci-fi, but just a kind of... It had to have a legitimate taste to it. It had to feel like, you know, it was written and made by somebody who understood sci-fi, you know. So we're very careful not to overstep, you know.
So how did you get involved? Because you've got Amanda Tapping.
Yeah.
You've got Robin Dunn.
Yeah.
You've got Kristen.
Yeah.
You know, like... Big icons. People icons in sci-fi fantasy and you know, and then you've got yourself all together. How did that happen?
I was in Toronto Film Festival with a film, and Rob Merrilies had produced a film I'd done before called Stone of Destiny, about the Stone of Scone, the kind of Scottish stone that all the kings wear.
Was it originally Irish, by the way?
No, it wasn't. It was always Scottish. See these Irish?
No, they want to claim everything.
They're claiming everything, aren't they?
My father told me they stole it.
No, they didn't.
The English stole it.
But then we stole it back.
Yes.
But so we did that film, so I knew Rob from that. And Rob was working with Robin on this script. So Robin had managed to get Amanda involved. Uh-huh. And then I met Rob, and he gave me the script, and I was like, this is crazy, I love it, let's do this. And I'd just done a movie with Kristen, Ecstasy. So I got in touch with Kristen and seen if she wanted to do it, and she said, yeah, and that was it.
Wow.
So it was just friends saying, let's make a film, and in a kind of very old-fashioned way, you know.
Because the production of it is high quality. I mean, the special effects and the spaceship.
And the monster
and the universe. I mean, it's, you sort of look and you go, well, this isn't just an amateur production, it's high quality.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Rob Merrilies is one of the, you know, top producers in Canada, you know. Mm-hmm. This, he wouldn't take on something that wasn't, you know, great. And then it just happened that there was a sci-fi TV show, which I forget the name, but it was cancelled after one series. Something Gravity?
Defying Gravity.
Which was not a bad show, actually.
But if you look at our set, that's the set from Defying Gravity.
Oh, okay.
It's a good way to reuse it. Yeah.
Yeah, they'd spent like $1 million on this set, and then we got to buy it for $1 or something.
So it just was serendipity.
Yeah. So the set got kept, you know, for about a year or something till we financed the film, and then we got this amazing set. And we basically just built it in a sound studio, all of it. So it wasn't like normal where you would shoot all the kind of bridge part and then you'd tear down the bridge and you'd build the bedroom. And then you'd tear it, and then, you know, it was just all there. So if we said, oh, this is really funny, let's continue this, but let's continue it in the computer room, then the computer room was there. And so we could move around, and it was... And unlike, you know, low-budget indie movies, the set, when you pressed a button, things happened. It was magic.
You didn't have someone in the background.
No.
After CGI and everything. But you're right about elements. I mean, thinking about the movie, you've got Robin outside, which reminds me of Red Dwarf.
Yes,
at the beginning.
Yes.
So you have all those little iconic moments almost from different sci-fi shows along the way.
Definitely.
And, I mean, the green goo comes all the way back to the blob and all of those kind.
And Quark for the garbage disposal unit.
Yeah, there's lots of bits. There's, you know, 2001, there's Alien, there's, you know, they're all little, but not obvious things.
Overt.
No.
Very covert.
Only people who really know sci-fi would get, you know.
And I love that scene where the monster is telling Amanda to kill you.
Right.
It's extremely bizarre.
Right, it's completely bizarre.
And then we have to, of course, say that George Takei was the voice of your rubber ducky too.
Right.
I mean,
who could have been better? He's perfect.
So you probably didn't see him at all. Did he do his voiceovers?
He wasn't even cast when we made the movie. We didn't know who we wanted this then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I can't remember who did the voice.
Is that your favourite movie, like, experience?
It's certainly one of them. You know, all movies have a different sort of...
Yeah. It's just that your face lights up when you actually talk about it.
Yeah.
It's not just...
I love it, and I kind of, you know... And it's a shame because... You know, we put it online for people to buy, and you just kind of, there's a part of you that wants that to work just because it would be a nice world to live in, you know, that people could just make a movie and then obviously the investors have to get their money back, otherwise you can't make another one.
Mm.
So if enough people bought it, then we could make another one.
And it's cheap, because like it's only $8 online.
$8?
$8!
You know,
you pay more than that for two cups of coffee.
And, you know, if a million people bought that, which isn't huge in the world, you could pay everybody off and make another one.
Mm. Is that what you want?
Yeah, it'd be great.
Great. Get the old crew back.
Yeah, get the crew back together.
You still got the set? Or did you start that on?
No, we still have the set and we still have the time machine. So we can go anywhere.
GoFundMe. There you go. GoFundMe.
Right. Well, that's what we should do.
You should do that, actually. Because when you've looked at some of the things out there, the movies that actually have been, I mean, I remember Eliza Dushku did a documentary over in where Czechoslovakia were, or post, she raised $300,000 just for those kind of things.
And the Kickstarter campaigns and that sort of thing.
GoFundMe, Kickstarter. Why don't you do a space milkshake and get them to pay $8 to buy... make a new one.
But I'd rather it was done that people had seen the movie and want to see another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Rather than say, give us money to go and make a movie. I'd rather they said, well, that was great. Go and make another one. And they can do that by buying the first one.
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of places are doing it. There's the Minister of Chance of Doctor Who, which started off giving away things for free.
That's right,
And then they've actually GoFundMe a movie.
Right,
now they're making a live-action movie out of it as well. So
good.
There are possibilities there.
Yeah, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it was nice to work with kind of the level of professional in an indie film, you know, to work with, like, the obviously the DOP was amazing, the sci-fi guy, you know, the... makeup was brilliant, the monsters and all that. It's just really fun to work with those people who are normally working in big budget movies. To come and work in an indie was, you know, and Amanda and all that, just lovely.
Just another passion you have is your music.
Absolutely.
You've still got a strong connection to The Hobbit because your song is played right at the end.
Yeah.
Was that something, how did Peter ask you just to do that, or how did that come about?
Well, it started with the song I wrote for Return of the King, The Edge of Night, that I sang to Denethor. They called me up and asked if it would be cool to use that for the trailer for The Hobbit. And I thought, that's a great idea, it'd be lovely. And then I think that just got the ball rolling on, maybe you could write the song for the end credits, you know. So I went back down to New Zealand and worked really closely with Fran Walsh on trying to get the right song for, you know, not just the end of the movie, but the kind of end of Middle-earth on screen for our generation. And so I wrote that song.
And the official film clip really does, being the last goodbye, it really does show the expanse of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and it is the last goodbye, isn't it, in more ways than one.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was really important to kind of get that right, and we worked on it for much longer than we thought we would, you know. I thought I'd be there for a couple of days, I was there for about a month.
Oh, really? Yeah, was that to get the feel of what was
just
happening?
Just to get it right, yeah. And you know, I'd watched the film a couple of times and I'd hang out with Pete in his edit room and watch him edit it and just getting the feeling of what was going on in Wellington at that time, you know, as it's all finishing up and, you know, all the kind of memories.
Because actors don't get that very often, do you? You don't get the end bit.
No.
You know, you just get the beginning and...
Yeah, off you go.
Off you go. Mm. See you at the
premiere.
And
then we'll start working on it, you know. So it'd be hanging around at that. It was wonderful, you know.
So was that a nice way for you to close your character off and your experience?
Yeah. And then it's funny how it all... Because then I went from that to working on a new album with my band. And we did a version of... Last Goodbye for the new album. It wasn't even The Last Goodbye because it continued again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's almost like it all connects somehow. Yeah. So, yeah.
I have to say my favourite part of the Lords of the Rings trilogy was actually the Air New Zealand ad.
Oh, it's great.
That was funny. That was more than anything, it was funny.
It's lovely.
They do fantastic humour in New Zealand, haven't
they? Yeah.
Really, really funny.
They're just not... things are just, you know, people get too scared now that they'll go out of, like, you know, there's always publicists hanging around making sure you don't say the wrong thing, you know what I mean? And I love in New Zealand, they kind of don't do that. They're just like, whatever.
Whatever.
It'll be funny.
It'll be funny. And it is. Even their adverts.
Yeah.
In between the programs are funny. You don't watch television, you watch the adverts.
And Pete Jackson brings that mentality to his movies, you know. He doesn't go and make them in America. He's like, no, I'm making it in New Zealand. So people can't say, don't do that, because he's too far away.
And on that note, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you much. It's been great.
Thank you. That was lovely. Thank you very much.
Doctor Who Pod Shop.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No.
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy and Outpost Gallifrey.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
Go out and get Space Milkshake. You won't be disappointed.
As long as you come from the point of view that you're going to laugh through it and you're not going to expect it to be Oscar-winning material.
Well, it's not highbrow stuff
no,
at all.
No, it's not at all. And Galaxy Quest isn't either.
No, but that's probably a bit more fun if you're into the con scene, that's for sure.
Yes. And, of course, if you're listening to our podcast, you must be.
Absolutely.
A geek.
A geek. So you would know about these already.
And we'd like to thank
Oz Comic Con
for our interview with Sam, and you can find them at
OzComicCon.com. And we also like to thank Oz Comic Con for Billy.
Oh, both of them. Absolutely right. I was at that one. She interviewed Sam on her own, and I interviewed Billy on my own.
No, I interviewed Billy with you.
See, we've done so many interviews, sometimes you just get lost, don't you?
You do.
We did do Billy together.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
Because I talked about The Hobbit and his
song. Because
it
was, also on holidays, that one.
Well.
Must have been, because you were there.
I was there.
Because the last one you weren't. Do we need to do that wee bit again?
No, we'll just keep this in.
Just keep this in. Okay. That's all fun. So that's us for now.
Yep. See you next time.
Bye.